This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 137.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello, welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese picture Goodfellas one babe in the woodsing minute at a time. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. With me are Josh Flanagan.
Yep.
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
I forgot there for a second.
Yeah. This has been the moment Josh has been waiting for. All right, I'm sorry. Go on.
So this minute begins with Henry telling Karen that he just can't go into witness protection without her and the kids, and it ends on a cliffhanger with what will happen to Henry if he stays out in the streets. We don't know. We'll find out tomorrow. Moore Ed McDonald giving zero fucks as he... as he lays down
He's not saying them because he's not giving them.
I feel like we need to cede the floor to Josh so he can have his moment.
I feel like I have other things before then, but that's fine.
No, just go with it. Go with it.
All right. No, we're going to get to it. I don't want to blow my wall.
All right, then.
So I really like that at the beginning of this minute, Henry sort of puts everything on Karen. He does this classic guilt trip thing. And he's, because she's not sure, she's like, maybe I shouldn't go or whatever. And he's just like, you do whatever.
The two things about that. One is that, it's her talking about how you don't need me and whatnot, right? And Henry goes into the, I can't do this without you and the kids, I need you, whatever. But what I found fascinating is that Henry starts the little monologue or soliloquy about how he needs her. He turns to Karen, the camera cuts to Ed McDonald, and then holds on Ed McDonald for, which is, and I know we're watching this minute by minute, and it seems like an eternity, but 6 to 7 seconds of Ed McDonald listening to Henry do this and kind of awkwardly nodding. And I was like,
looking at the ground, yeah.
Why did they stay on Ed McDonald for this? It's amazing. So that was amazing. Uh-huh. And then they cut back, and Henry's got his hand on Karen's arm, and he's telling her, and then he does, which is my favorite hand motion of all this, where he goes, so that's how I feel, so you do what you got to, and like shakes his, like, it's that weird,
he goes, you do whatever, but
yep,
that's
and,
it.
And like shakes his hands, and then moves away from her, and like, it's like, wow, he's amazing. It's the Henry distortion field all over again.
Yeah. This is like, this is like the best acting that Leota's done in the movie, I feel like, in this scene.
Yeah.
Like, he's really putting a lot out there, and it feels very natural, but it's almost over the top. It's cool.
Yeah. It's this that hand motion, he takes his hand off her arm, and then he holds out both of his palms and, like, does the one goes up, one goes down, you know? So it's like, you do with that. Yeah, I'm done. Like, I'm done. Like,
he also gives him sustained eye contact, which might be the first time in this scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I've got a pause where he is just boring into McDonald with his eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like how she is all, Karen's also, she keeps saying, she says the words, you know, you don't want me.
Yeah.
She says it several times, like, so she's trying to convince everybody, including herself.
Well,
you know, that this isn't a thing she has to do when she sort of starts to realize the reality of it.
Well, what's funny, and we're getting closer to it. I know. In the book, how she explains the scene is that she literally says in the book, in Wise Guy, then McDonald started his little blackmail. He said there was enough evidence to indict me in the narcotics case. He said I would be on trial. He asked what I thought the effect that might have on the kids. Right? So Karen, in retrospect, refers to this as Ed's little blackmail.
Are you telling me that the criminals and their families have no respect for law enforcement?
Well, my note here is that I think that Ed out-hustles both of them.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
But he does it without any lying.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He just got his shit lined up so that he's prepared for anything. Yeah. He says everything up front, what it's going to be, but he's got them completely. Yeah. And it's funny because you've watched this whole time pseudo-admiring or actually admiring these criminals, and you're just like, oh, he just outclassed them.
So now here's a question. So you're Ed McDonald, right? So this happened in 1980, okay? And in this time period, you have put away, and I don't want to spoil later on the movie, but there are other cases that didn't involve Henry or whatever. But in this time period, you have prosecuted organized crime members. You've put people in jail. You've taken people off the streets, okay? And sure, there's an article in the Post, and there's an article in the Times, maybe, you know, and all this sort of stuff. He probably got some sort of ribbon, you know, the mayor, maybe Ed Koch shook his hand, right? Is this Ed McDonald's victory lap?
In the movie?
In the movie? Like, is this him? Like
100%.
And, yeah, is he just like, I did this, and now I'm in the movie, and everyone's going to see me talking tough to these criminals?
Well, not only that, but he gets to recreate the moment, but in the way he probably wished he could have done it originally.
Right, yeah. Oh, I wish I had said it. I wish I had said it like this.
Well, I mean, yeah, but he just told them he did.
He gets to rub it in. Basically. Yeah. This is rubbing it in for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's
very good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
He's great.
To which Karen says, but I don't know anything.
You don't need me.
To which Ed says,
Josh, because...
To which Ed says, come on, you don't know anything. Which is great. Followed by, don't give me the babe in the woods.
Don't give me the babe in the woods routine.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. But I really love the, come on, you don't know anything. Oh, that is so New York.
Right. So, yeah. And now what's great about the Babe in the Woods routine, which, by the way, is one of the best line deliveries or whatever, according to Ed McDonald in the interview in the Wall Street Journal law blog that I read, this scene was improvised, and they did it 6 or 7 times, and he guesses he said Babe in the Woods routine once in those 6 or 7 times.
Oh, yeah, he found it.
So just that imagine that there are scenes of him doing this and improvising and not saying the Babe in the Woods routine.
Oh. I mean, the thing is that's amazing, by the way. That's one step further that he's improvising and not reading from a script, by the way.
Yep.
Point that out there. So this line really colors mine, like, to go back and watch the movie again, it colors my impression of her the entire time, because we spent the entire movie trying to figure out how in on it she was and what level of denial she was living at.
Well, by the end, we figured she was, I mean, she's deep into it. And they weren't on him with the wiretaps until the end. So
yeah.
Right.
when he refers to her being on the phone talking about cocaine, she was going with Henry to drug runs in the hotel. So
yeah,
she was fully in by the end.
I really feel like when she was saying it, though, she believed it. She said, I don't know anything.
I don't
like
it. You believe it, Josh.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
She believed it.
She didn't, she didn't question where the drugs were coming from, or she, you know what I mean? Like, she didn't know anything. Like, Henry just brought the stuff and it's all him. And yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Bowl of cocaine next to the bed just appeared every night, like as if of magic.
The justifying that she must have done in her life. I mean, it's obviously the whole Carmela Soprano character is kind of based off of that idea.
Right.
They explored the same thing, but it's really interesting.
Right.
So the question is, like, is she a bad person?
No.
Depends on your morality. She was, would say she turned her husband into the police immediately as soon as she found out he was a criminal. I mean, that's...
If Woody had gone directly to the police, this would never have happened. But you asked the question, if Karen's a bad person, I mean, but that Henry's a bad person, because Henry's not
okay.
A bad,
let's for the Henry's, sake of argument,
Henry's not a bad person.
Let's just say for the sake of argument, though, that he is, and so then it becomes
Josh. Again, you were painting your bias against the Italian Americans, hardworking guys who are just cutting some corners.
She's Jewish.
You can see, by the way, Henry's Jewish star and his necklace prominently in the scene, by the way, which I thought was funny.
Just the good half.
Yeah.
What's funny? He must. Did he have to convert?
No. Maybe. Who knows?
I don't know. Wearing it.
Yeah.
That's not.
Yeah.
Well, I just like for the sake of argument, say that Henry's a bad guy. Now she's, you know, complicit. She's enabling. She's, you know, like at what point is her? What's her responsibility?
She's also protecting her family.
True.
Yeah.
I mean it's a real quagmire.
It's almost as if they live in a bubble, right?
Yes.
And all this stuff is happening, and Henry is bringing stuff from the outside world into this bubble. And in 1968, it was nice and sunny and wonderful. And as the years have gone on, it has gotten more and more overcast and more cloudy to the point where they are just ensconced in darkness.
And it happens slowly, too.
Right, exactly.
Like, all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, when did it become night? And right. You're already there, so.
And I don't think Karen rationally or purposely did anything to bring the night to her family. I think that, admittedly, I will admit that was all Henry. And all she's done is deal with it. You know, and like Henry has created the status quo for her. And the status quo eventually became, you know, cocaine in the sugar bowl and hang out with drug dealers and all this sort of stuff. And that happens slowly. It's like you wake up one day and like, Jesus Christ, it's not like one day they're addicts.
So you don't got to tell me twice.
Yeah, no, exactly. So
I can't imagine that the mafia looks well on divorce.
Well, one number one, Connor, as we've said, 100.
Right. I'm sorry.
There's no such good thing. No such thing as the mafia. And number two, as Paulie said, we are not out of Mali. So.
So, before we move on, the term Babe in the Woods goes back to 1595, a ballad called The Children in the Woods, which is about two young orphans who are abandoned in the woods and then die.
Okay.
So that's where the term comes from. It's been used to connote innocence, doe-eyed innocence, since 1595.
Right. Well,
and it's been Ed McDonald that whole time.
Karen's got some doe-eyed innocence here, and Ed just drops.
She doesn't, look at her eyes; she's got the hard eyes going.
Yeah, I know. So Ed goes into just a straight. I mean, if this is improvised, like he did it for life. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. But he lays out what's going to happen.
Yeah,
like what's going to happen, and then we get the overlay of Jimmy getting arrested in a very bad top.
Which feels really jarring at first because the other scene's still going on. So it just feels it's kind of a bold move. It's sort of non-traditional storytelling in that sense. So they're still doing some interesting cutting right up to the end of this, which is kind of cool.
I like how Jimmy is walked out with, you know, perp walked from his storefront in Gowanus or wherever it is.
Yes, same place.
Warehouse. Yeah.
And
it's the swag room.
He's wearing some that you know, that fuzzy velvet kind of shirt. Like, it's not terry cloth, but it's like that similar kind of 70s material. But I also like the fact that as he walks, you can see that he's got a lit cigarette. He's handcuffed and he's still holding the cigarette.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, waste it.
We're not at a Mali.
Yeah. So. And I also like all the, you know, there are lots of feds around, but then there's also just guys on the street watching it happen. And they look.
Of course. This is New York.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Right there.
Yeah. So.
It's all coming to a head here.
Yeah.
It's over.
What's also interesting is that in real life, when this meeting happened with Ed McDonald and Karen and Henry, Karen's mother is sitting outside in the waiting room.
What are those people doing in there?
Well, which is funny because, you know, in the book, Karen says, my mother had been waiting outside McDonald's office with the kids. She was very upset. She wanted
She's with the kids? That's even worse.
Yeah, I know. She started yelling about Henry, how he had never been any good, how he had brought all this upon us. So there you go.
Well, he's not Jewish. You know what these people are like?
Oh, man.
She was not wrong.
She was not wrong. No.
Well, I have nothing else for this minute. It's the same minute as last week.
Yep.
Or yesterday. I don't know what's going on.
Babe in the Woods. I mean, the thing is that like yesterday's episode, legitimately bronchial. Today's episode, Babe in the Woods. right?
There's another one for tomorrow.
There's another one for tomorrow. Don't, yeah, yep.
So don't you
this week is a lot about little moments yeah. as we wind down. So
jerk off.
All right, I don't have anything else. So
I got the fuck count is zero.
I like how Ed delivers this. Ed doesn't curse.
He's a professional.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. He's a stand-up guy. I'll posit a quick question for you guys before we wrap up. Is, in fact, the hero of this movie Ed McDonald?
Yes. It
depends on who you ask.
Is this entire movie just one big lead-up to the last 10 minutes when you realize that it's U.S. Attorney Ed McDonald's story?
That's what he had. That's what he said in his head as he was getting ready for this.
Exactly.
not if you ask Bo Deedle.
He's got Ed's got the tissue in his collar as he's getting his makeup done, and he's looking at himself in the mirror, and he's like, "This is your moment.
This is all you.
It's all come to this.
Make him realize it's all your story. You're the one. You're the hero."
And then Bo Deedle walks in. He's not even shooting that day, but he just seems to be there.
Hey, goes,
hey, call him a dickhead. I did it. It works great. Marty loves it. You call him a dickhead. Just like be like really condescending and like touch him a lot.
We're going to be movie stars, Ed. What I love is that now for 10 years, from 1990 onward, Bo Deedle will call Ed McDonald on a regular basis. Hey, Ed, hey, let's go out. You know, and Ed is just like, oh, Deedle, leave me alone.
I'm here with Johnny Roast Beef.
Ed, the phone's for you again. Yes, it is. Just come pick it up.
We're at Rayo's. No, come on, Ed. You never come to Rayo's. We got a table. We got the pasta. We got the bread. We got the wine. Ed, why don't you come hang out with us at Rayo's?
Johnny Roast Beef is going to be there.
He's always there. He's always there, Bo.
Oh, what? Mr. Tony's too good for us? I could imagine.
Now I'm going to be sad that that doesn't happen.
I could spend hours imagining Bo Deedle's life as he's just calling people to hang out.
What do you mean, who is it? It's Bo.
It's Bo. It's your buddy Bo Deedle.
Hello?
Bye bye, fucko.
Is that it for minute 137?
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's a bonus there for the people at home.
Tune in tomorrow for minute 138. Until then, you can check us out on Twitter at GoodfellowsMin and on Instagram and Facebook at GoodfellowsMinute. And you can find all of our episodes at GoodfellowsMinute.com. To support the show, you can go to Patreon.com/GFM or you can go to GoodfellowsMinute.com/support. You can shop via Amazon. If you have any questions or comments, or if you know that Bo Deedle and U.S. Attorney Ed McDonald hang out, email us at contact@GoodfellowsMinute.com. And until tomorrow,
bye.
Call us, Bo.
Bye, fuckos.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up to you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.